Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
So I don't have a massive amount to say about this book, mainly because, you know, it is quite short. Like it's a very, very short little book, only about 180 pages, and they're small pages as well. I read it in a day and a half, something like that.
Right, very short. It's
a very short novella. I love the striking cover art though, with the sailor, you know, in the water with a seagull in his hands.
It's generally one of my favorite book covers ever invented. Mm. We can see a picture, guys.
There's later, pictures of it on our Instagram already in preview. So
exactly, but by the way, it's called "The Story of a Shipwrecked Sailor," which is maybe yes in English. Okay, so I was confused about that. Relato de un náufrago. Okay,
I read it in Spanish anyway. I picked it up in Madrid, and you know, the waiter in this one restaurant was excited that I'd bought Spanish books, but then not excited that I'd bought Latin American books. And I suppose that'd be like going to Oxford and saying that you'd bought English literature, but then bringing out American stuff. I can get why he's annoyed, you know?
Okay.
But what happens in this one? Look, I was also disappointed at the beginning to find that it was nonfiction. I thought I'd bought a novel, and then I realized afterwards that I hadn't. Hmm. But I really enjoyed it anyway, so that became irrelevant. Yeah. You know, I generally don't go for nonfiction, but you don't even notice because it's told like a story.
Totally.
So
totally,
it's fine,
yeah, totally.
You know? So the chap becomes shipwrecked, and essentially we just, you know, it's a 10-day ordeal he has trying to survive on this raft. And you know, he just tells us about the birds that come, the sharks that come, and he's trying to keep himself safe. He doesn't really have anything to eat or drink. He thinks he's going crazy at parts, and he's hallucinating things. It's just a good story. I mean, you've read this one, you love this one. So do you have anything to say about it?
Well, not just have I read it. I think I've read it about six or seven times, this book.
Wow.
This is, I read it when I was just before I became 18. And I was getting really into Latin American literature. It was just taught in my school. And I'd read a lot of Spanish, because I went to Spanish school. I read a lot of Spanish novels, loved it, but it became a bit, I just read too many. And I thought Latin American books, and yeah, I'm afraid me and that waiter would have a lot to talk about. I would take a Latin American novel anytime instead of a Spanish novel. Sorry, do you love Spanish mainland literature? But the novelists for me are the ones in Latin America in general. And 100 Years of Solitude is one of my favorite novels of all time, books. But this one, even though it's a lot less well known, is almost on the same level for me, because this is the ultimate Robinsonade book. For me, it's even more kind of effect. The Robinson Crusoe, because it's truly being 10 days and a castaway raft, and he's hungry, he's seeing things, it's very introspective. It's just about what's going on in his heart, because it doesn't talk too much about what he's thinking. And I just feel like every time I read that book, it's like I can taste the salt. I'm really on that raft with him for 10 days. It's always the He's always talking about the sharks, and he has to keep away from them, and yeah, and I just love.
But he does catch one, or he tries to eat one, or something at one point.
Exactly, yes, and it's not so much of a wow, the story is amazing, but it's just the realism and that particular atmosphere, like The Man in the Sea. I love that book too. I love all these books that are set in seas. So for me, it's that great atmosphere, and the Spanish. I mean, it came out in 1970, I think, after he became famous. It was 100 Years of Solitude. But this was written for a newspaper in 1955. And Gabriel Garcia Marquez was around 27, 28 when that came out. So imagine writing that 27, 28. And I think he was banned as well. And he had to leave anyway. He had to leave to Paris. You know, no one.
Oh.
It was a big controversy in Colombia. Because this guy was actually... The problem is, this is based on a true story, and if you read the book, it's really criticizing the government. So this was not a pro-Colombian book. It was a very anti-government book. So
And
it's
I
hard.
understand that he gave the rights to the actual guy that the story was based on.
Exactly, yeah. And he actually says, like, actually says that, well, this is not my story. I'm just helping him put it into words. And I'm
Yeah.
wondering, yeah, but how true is that? Are you just being, I feel like he's being modest. It's just too good. If he did that, then he's an excellent sort of co-mediator as well as an author, which it could be. It could be just, it could be literally taking those words and then making
Because
it into
it
books.
does read like a novel. Like it doesn't read like a, you know, a boring factual account, you know. It's
Totally.
an enjoyable one.
Totally. I love it. Absolutely love it. And I highly recommend it. And if you can read in Spanish, guys, the prose is simple and sweet, like
It's
Old
easy
Man in
to
the
read,
Sea.
yeah.
Like Old Man in the Sea. I love that kind of literature. Short and easy.
It's easy to read. I didn't, you know, I didn't really struggle with the language at all.
Totally. Yeah. Did you feel like the, because honestly, I've read that book and I remember a few times just reading it straight afterwards. Even though the story might not be spectacular, do you feel like it could be a book that you just read out of relaxation? Because for me, it's one of those novels I just feel like, oh, just want to read to relax, just
Yeah,
get away.
it was relaxing. I mean, I read it on the day that I was traveling to Madrid. I really did it, you know, mostly in one day.
Which is strange because the topic isn't relaxing, you know what I mean? But that's what I find so fascinating. It's not relaxing being cast away, but yet it feels very relaxing to read
Yeah.
it. So.
And that brings us, PJ, to this month's sponsor. If you ever find yourself trapped in the ocean, just take out your mobile device and go to raftrescueservices.gov and we'll send that raft for you.
Well, yeah.
So if you're ever stuck, that's all you need. Get the raft. And
Yeah.
PJ, our second sponsor this month, I figured out why the kids aren't reading. They like something else called the sports. So this month
Sports.
we're also sponsored by sports. It's the big fight. It's
Sports.
Jim Bob McGrimbob versus Person McPherson in the big fight.gov. So
All
those are
right.
the things that the kids like, and we're doing a crossover there with them. So
Check it out, guys.
that's this month's sponsorships.
Check it out.
We have one more book, which is that you've also read. It's Hard Boiled Wonderland and the End of the World
How to
by
border
Kamen.
the Wonderland to Sekai
Yes. Now,
Nowari.
this one is, I didn't think I was going to like it, to be honest, because I wasn't a massive fan of Kafka on the Shore. I think it got a bit silly with the colonel and everything. And I started this, and immediately the first few pages, I thought, oh no, we lack some world building. I thought there's not been enough world building, and already it's giving me, you know, technical terms about these creatures and these people and their jobs and their things and a lot of scientific terms, and I don't know what's going on. Now, yeah, you find out pretty quickly what's going on, but just in the beginning, I thought like there's a lot of terminology I'm not familiar with. I feel like I've been dropped into a world I don't know. I would have liked a bit more world building first or something. And I felt a little bit like I'm not gonna like this. But I was completely wrong. I absolutely loved it. And again, I
Oh
read it in
really?
2 days. I loved it, yeah.
Oh really? Because I remember I remember you writing at some point saying, "I'm not sure about this." I said, "Nah,
Yeah,
come
that was
on."
in the beginning. And I read it over 3 days. After the first day, I thought, you know, I'm not sure if I like it, but I still can't put it down. And then after the second day, I thought, no, I really, really want to finish this, you know, and the third day, then I raced to the end. So.
I love Hard Boiled Wonderland, and it would have to be. I think I've read almost every Murakami book in English. At least, oh, maybe not the most recent ones, but I've read a lot of them and even bits of it in Japanese. It's absolutely. I love this book. It's the first book I read, and still for me, it holds a very dear spot in my heart. I love the map. Well, I'll be honest with you. I love maps anyway. I love maps
Very good.
in all kinds of books, but I just love this particular map. I'm not sure if your edition has one, but most editions have this a map of the end of the world because what do you want to tell the plot, basically,
Yeah, sure. So
the game.
essentially, and you've actually read it more times than I have, so you probably know, even though I've read it more recently, you probably know it better than I do. But we essentially have two separate, what seems like two separate stories. We have Hard-Boiled Wonderland, and we have The End of the World.
So
So Hard-Boiled.
one is a noir story, and the other one is a fantasy story, basically.
Yeah, so The End of the World is kind of this this world where they're in this little town. He's separated from his shadow. There's a gatekeeper who won't, now and again he lets him see his shadow, but he's essentially stuck in this walled town. It's a kind of, it reminded me a little bit of some of the scenes that happen. Actually, I can see an inspiration from Murakami with your own writing.
Totally, yeah, I was very inspired by
and
that.
there's a few things,
Particularly at
but
the end of the world part. So yeah, because basically he has to, it's just a kind of a man with a shadow, and he for some reason he needs to enter this fortress town, but he has to leave a shadow beside in kind of an apple orchard. And then,
yeah,
so and but he has to enter
and then he
without a
can't
shadow.
leave again.
Yeah, he can't leave again because
But interestingly, no characters are named. It's just, the guy, the librarian, the gatekeeper, the chubby girl. No one's named in this book. And the end of the world chapters are shorter typically. But he really just he wants to, help his shadow get back together. He wants to find a way out. But meanwhile, he's got to read dreams in the library with the librarian. And he can't go into the woods because that's dangerous. And that's a nice little contained piece. But then we have the main story, which is this chap who's essentially some kind of data processor. Like, they'll get him to process data using his own body, like a kind of computer, and he'll shuffle the data and, protect it so that other people can't access it, essentially. But he was to work for this old man, this old professor, and they go into an underground lab that's like through the waters and everything, but there's these creatures called Inklings that are trying to get to them. And
Think
they're
so.
using like some kind of sonar pulses or something to keep them away. But they go in, to this kind of bunker. But then the old man disappears and whatever. And then there's some weird scenes though, and it happens in both stories where people just offer to sleep with him very willy-nilly.
That's a
You know,
framework. It's a
the chubby girl
framework.
is like, well, she's 17 as well. It's like, well, how's things, Would you like to take me to your bed, sir? And it's just, it's just a little bit strange.
Murakami has been deeply criticized for that, especially in the last few years with the rise of feminism in Japanese literature. I remember like there's an interview with a few female, because it's become very popular actually, a lot of female literature. They're purposely kind of marketing that in Japan now, because it used to be very male centered. And there was like an interview saying, like all these female authors saying, Murakami, we really like your stuff, but your portrayal of woman, he needs some work on that, man. And he actually took it on well. He actually said, oh, fair enough, yeah, I'll take that into consideration.
Okay, good. Because I didn't think, some of the women characters are good, like the librarian, and things like that are good. And the chubby girl is quite, she's not independent as such, she relies on her granddad, but she's a strong character in some ways. But then there's just, the librarian wants to sleep with him, she wants to sleep with him. In the dream world, the other librarian wants to sleep with him. And they all always ask in a really strange and unnatural way. It's like, were you planning on inviting anyone to your bed tonight? Because I'm definitely available if you were thinking about that. It's just a really weird thing. But apart from that, I really, really loved it. And of course, I'm not going to spoil what happens, why are there two different worlds. Yeah, obviously there's some kind of link for it, there's some
There's
kind of
a
reason for it,
connection there.
but yeah.
It's lovely. I
It's
love it.
brilliant, yeah. So I'm really glad I read it.
And yeah, I particularly I'm very inspired, particularly by the end of the world part. The end of the world part, actually, this was released in 1984, and around 1980, he finished a novella, which is basically the end of the world segment, and he didn't publish it. He was deeply unhappy. He thought it was garbage, basically. But eventually it turned into this two-part novel. So it did actually start. It's kind of interesting. So he kind of found a way to mix them two together. But it did start as, okay, I've got this end of the world part was a shadow. That's kind of the premise. You just thought, okay, a shadow and a man needs to separate for some reason. Fortress town is, and then eventually it came out, I think, even as I'm not, I think it came out like a protocopy, but it's never published. I think it's a very rare book. Love to get my hands on that one. If anyone's going to give me a Christmas gift, guys, please find me that copy of the original End of the World, just that part novella. And he turned to a novel, was great. And I find that both of them mix very well together. And the map is such a delight. He can't, because he keep looking back in the map and imagining where it is. And Yeah, I think it's absolutely great. And there's love. It's a very much a postmodern book. He's very much a postmodern author in the sense of these postmodern authors are very influenced. They're very influenced by all kinds of literature and take what they want. A bit like a clergyman's daughter, to be honest. That sounds like a more of a postmodern book. But this one is particularly deep in science fiction, noir, and fantasy. And it's a detective at the beginning. It's a bit Philip K. Dickens, Dick, not Dickens, but Philip K. Dick. Enzian. And no, I love it. I think it's great. I'm glad you enjoyed that. I like Kafka on the Shore, but I can it's different, this one here. This one is really getting even more surreal. Did you like Norwegian Wood?
I didn't, Norwegian Wood, I don't think I've read.
Because it's his most popular book, but this was written, I think Norwegian Wood was the first novel, excuse me, written after this one.
Right.
But it's so different because it really, he actually said to himself, I want to write something different than I usually write, kind of like George Orwell did, Clergyman's Daughter. And it became, fascinating enough, his most popular book at a very controversial opinion, everyone, but it's among my two least favorites Murakami books.
Wow.
I hardly enjoyed it, I'll be honest. Sorry, Murakami, but I love most of your books. So it's interesting that people's opinions, Norwegian Wood is the big thing. This was kind of forgotten in Japan, even though I think this is
Wow.
such a beauty of a book.
Just when you mentioned Philip K. Dick, I took a picture in Madrid. I meant to say it, send it to you. Because when I was in the bookshop in Madrid, they had a whole shelf of Philip K. Dick,
Really?
and right beside him there is Ursula K. Le Guin.
Yeah.
And some Ray Bradbury. You know what I find? The
Ray
Spanish
Ramirez.
bookshops have a better selection of English books than any bookshop I've been in Northern Ireland.
And they pay a lot more, don't they? They pay
Oh yeah,
like
they're
20
really, you
euros,
can't,
do they?
yeah, you need to remortgage your house to take like
It,
free
it's
books.
it's it's ridiculous. But like it just shows you that they really appreciate though that they would actually
And
pay
they
that
have a
much.
lot of Dumas, they have a lot of Wilkie Collins, they have
Yeah.
A lot, they've all the obvious classics, your Jane
Yeah.
Austens and whatever, but they have a lot of Wilkie Collins that I'm struggling to find in Belfast. They have just again, there's more Ray Bradbury stuff there. There's a lot of stuff, and
Oh.
it's sad that they've got a better selection there than here, actually.
It's absurd, right? Oh, Lord.
There's one last book I want to tell you about quickly. This is a book called Do Over by Juliette Rose. This is a really, really good book, but it deals with some difficult themes and it can be a little bit sad in parts.
Oh, okay.
So we have this girl, Sam, and she feels almost Orwellian, like she feels disconnected with the world, disconnected with herself. She doesn't really kind of know who she'll look in the mirror and not really even know like who is this person. Like she's just completely disconnected from everything. And she has a friend, Miri. She sleeps with Miri's husband. They have a fight, and she says, "You know
Oh, God.
what? Forget this." She packs a bag and just drives away. New life, that's it. Leaves a note for the landlord saying, I'm gone, and just goes to start a new life. And she goes to this nice little seaside resort, beach town, tourist summer place, And she gets a job working in the diner, and she meets a chap called Smitty. Well, she's called Smith, but she just decides he's called Smitty, and another chap, Casey. And she makes friends with them. But sometimes they're really fun, and sometimes they're a little bit off, especially Casey can be quite moody, and she realizes that there's actually a lot of really hardcore drug use going on,
Wow.
and there's drug dealing going on, and then there's deaths happening, and it's in parts it can be quite difficult to deal with, but it is a really nice story, and of course we get a little love story thrown in there because I love a love story
Oh, yeah.
with Sam and Smitty. But yeah, it's one that keeps you going, and you don't really know till the end, is it going to work out or is everything just going to go to pot? Because it's
No.
very, very on a balancing on a thin wedge, most of the book. But it's quite a good one. And just a second, I think I hear the telephone ringing. PJ,
What?
I'm just going to go see who's on the line, and I'll be back in a few minutes.
All right.
Hey, you're through to Books Boys. Who's calling?
Hi, this is Juliet Rose.
Hey Juliet, you got Dean on the line. How are you doing?
Doing well, how are you?
I'm good, and it's such an interesting coincidence that you called in right when we were talking about your book, Do Over,
Very nice.
which thank you so much for sending to me. I just finished it yesterday, actually, and I really, really enjoyed it. Tell me, Well, it's not actually officially out yet, is it?
It is. It actually came out September 21st.
Oh, so it is out now. Okay, that's cool. So I'll put a link then in the show notes, and then if anyone wants to go buy it, then they'll be able to. Is this your first novel?
More or less. You know, I wrote years ago. I actually was a pretty avid writer in my 20s and 30s, and actually put out a novel back then that's no longer in print. I may eventually put it back out. And then I took a 15-year hiatus from writing altogether.
Wow.
And then this year I decided I just needed to get back on board. And so this is the first novel I've written in a very, very long time.
Right. So what got you to go back to it? Like, what was the urge, you know?
You know, life, like you start to say, okay, I don't live forever. I better jump back on board. And that was, you know, I've always loved writing. I do art as well. And, you know, for 15 years, I had little children that I was raising, and now they're older now. So I don't have to focus as much attention on them. And so this was really kind of my time to bring that.
Yeah. So you've got the time now to kind of do it.
For sure.
Brilliant. So, I mean, it's such an interesting novel because obviously we do have a love story at the heart of it, which, you know, I'm a diehard romantic, so I always like a good love story. But there's some dark themes as well, you know, particularly with the drug use and everything. Is that sort of, you know, something that you've always wanted to write about, or what kind of brought that idea to you?
You know, I think anything I write always has a dark element to it because that's life. That's, you know, we may have a love story, but most of us deal with some form of trauma or, you know, struggles in our lifetime. And so I think it's more realistic to show that side of it as well.
Yeah. No, I think that's a fair point. You know, it is more realistic, and it's interesting because the whole time you are rooting for the love story, because obviously we have the bit in the beginning where we see her pre-existing life with her friend Mary, and that all falls apart, and then with the main kind of story, you're just thinking like, please don't fall apart again, like I really want this one to work for her, and I want her to fall in love, and I want them to live together, you know, with Smitty, and I want it all to kind of work out, and you're just hoping the whole time, and you're almost waiting for it to collapse, but you're thinking don't.
that's a lot of feedback I've gotten. Everybody said, you know, I really didn't know what was going to happen, and that's what I wanted to write, because honestly when I was writing it, I didn't really know what was going to happen. You know, I think realistically it could have gone either way and it would have still made a really good story. And so I think that ultimately, you know, she had to come to herself, to come to someone else. And that's what the real lesson is that, you know, she couldn't really face connecting with anyone else if she didn't connect with herself first.
Yeah, I think that's something to take away from it. And it's very true. And, you know, it's generally good advice for everyone. You know, you need to have yourself right before you can do something with someone else. You know, that's just, that's unfortunately also part of life. Are you working on anything else at the moment?
I am. I have a few things in the works. I'm one of these people that has a bazillion things going at one time. So I have a novel that I have finished and I'm going through the editing process now that's coming out in January. And actually takes a character from the story. So Aiden, who I felt had way more of a place from Do Over, he has a story 7 years later that I'm currently working on the editing. So and that's also got, you know, a dark kind of twist to it. It's dealing with, you know, some controversial issues, especially in the US with police brutality and church control and things like that. So that kind of goes even darker than this one did. And then I have a novel coming out with Adelaide in May. That's called Trigger Point, and that deals with search and rescue. And specifically, one of the main characters is a deaf dog handler. And so it kind of gets into, you know, that relationship and communication through that. So.
Okay, cool. So that's going to be a bit of a different vibe from Do Over then, I guess.
It is. I always want to take on something, I guess, like a social issue or an issue when I write. I don't always go as dark, although that one does also have kind of a little bit of a darkness to it as well, that the main character has to face some trauma that she's going through, and not in search and rescue, but within her own life.
Right. Okay. No, fair enough. So this one's really good. So I'll just to give a little bit of plot for the guys listening. So we have Samantha, and she's, again, we said, like, she's going through her own stuff. She kind of doesn't really identify with herself. So you mentioned in the book that she'll be looking in the mirror and not even really recognize that this is herself, you know, which is a really interesting, you know, perspective, because you're really rooting for her initially to, as we said, to get with herself before you even have the love story.
And what was the decision with her first friend, with Miri, that they fall out with? You know, Miri hits her in the end, and I don't want to spoil kind of the story, but were you sure that you didn't want Miri to ever kind of get back in touch, or is that something you kind of decided at the last minute? Or,
you know, I think when I write, I kind of like let the characters tell me. So I didn't know. I didn't know if this was going to be a resolution. And ultimately what I realized is to stay within the vein of, you know, things don't always work out the way we want them to, and they don't always wrap up the way we want them to. And so in true relationships, people get to make those decisions. And so I did decide that, you know, she destroyed it. She had no way of really, she could reach out and do her part and own what she did, but that Miri had the same choice, that she could decide whether or not she wanted to be back in Sam's life. And so I made that choice based on what I think would realistically happen.
Yeah, because I guess with writing, it might be too easy to tie everything up in a little ribbon, but you're right. In real life, you know, Miri probably wouldn't have gotten back in touch. So it is right. More realistic, you know?
Yeah, I like to leave the reader a little frustrated, because I feel like that's the truth of how I tell a story, is that, you know, we want that happy ending. We want everything to be perfect. And sometimes there are things we have to sacrifice. And maybe we have partially a happy ending, but maybe we also lose some things because of choices that we make. And so I like to let the reader feel a little conflicted.
Yeah. And what's the inspiration for the town? You know, so obviously it's a sad little town. Like, people are coming there and it's a lovely little holiday village. But for the people, you know, actually living there, it's kind of same old day in, day out. It's kind of depressing. You know, they don't have, you know, great jobs and all that kind of stuff. The kids are all on drugs. And it's really curious because, you know, obviously I've never lived somewhere like that. So I'm coming in with the happy little holiday village for the weekend. And it's really curious to see, like, oh, this is what it's like for people stuck there.
Yeah. You know, I've moved around a lot. I've lost count of all the states and cities and towns I've lived in. And I've lived in some small towns. And the thing that I found frustrating living in small towns was that the youth really tend to be kind of ignored. It's the focus. If it's a tourist town, the focus is on tourism. If it's a college town, the focus is on the college. But typically there's not as much for youth to really do anymore in these small towns. I've lived in small towns in Nebraska and New York, and I lived on Tybee Island in Georgia, which is a small town, and that's very tourist-based. I grew up some of my years outside Wilmington, North Carolina, and it was small, and Wrightsville Beach was really small at that time, which now it's a huge tourist area. And so what you tend to see in those towns is you see that the locals are second thought. You know, they're not primary to the decisions made for that town. And so I really want to address that, because I've raised my own children in small towns and seen their struggles with that too. Yeah. You know, everything closes up at 6 o'clock, you know, and there's nothing for the youth to do. You know, the movie theaters have closed, the roller skating rinks have closed, everything closes that really allows them to have a life. And so they tend to find things to do. And so quite often that's drinking or drugs or partying, yeah. You know.
It's interesting because, you know, you're right. In that sense, you're almost a second class citizen in your own town then. Like, you're not thought of in like important decisions. It is just for the tourists who's bringing the money in.
Exactly.
Yeah, wow. And it's something I never thought of before, but it was hitting me a lot as I was reading it, because, you know, there's towns like that everywhere, you know, and it's kind of sad, but I guess it's true. So it's an important issue, I think, to bring out, that people maybe wouldn't have ever thought of, you know.
For sure. It's definitely pervasive in small towns. And I think that unless you've lived in one, like, people don't think about that. I currently live in a small town. And if you go into town on the weekends, it's very quaint and there's tourists everywhere. And there's, you know, lots of things to do for tourists. But, you know, when that all closes up, there's really nothing left.
Yeah, I think that's true of a lot of places. I mean, there's places even here in Northern Ireland that, you know, if it's not a sunny weekend, then it's a ghost town, you know.
Right, exactly.
That's the way it is, you know. Tell me this then, have you done a lot of reading yourself, you know, especially with the lockdown and things? What have you been reading yourself?
You know, lately I've actually been picking up a lot of dystopian kind of classics. I really like Octavia Butler, and I discovered her a couple of years ago. I was listening to NPR and they were talking about her writing, and I had never read her. And so I went and I got Kindred and I read it and I loved it. And then I read Parable of the Sower. And from there, I've kind of picked up other ones. I just finished Brave New World in the middle of 1984. I'm kind of going back on things I feel like were required in school, but I didn't necessarily connect to. And now I feel like as an adult, I really connect to them more.
Yeah. I'm actually, at the minute, I'm taking an evening class once a week on Orwell. Okay. So I'm reading all of his books. I'm not reading 1984 because, you know, I've read it a couple of times anyway, but I've just reviewed like most of his other like lesser known novels. And they're all really different, but they have the same underlying Orwellian threads to them, you know?
Right.
So it's interesting that you read that. I'm going to have to ask you then, Brave New World or 1984, like, which one do you find the most powerful?
So they're just such different styles of writing. And that's where I was talking. My son really wanted me to read 1984 because he read it and he's like, you've got to read this. And so I started reading it and I had read Brave New World. And the style is so different because Brave New World is like, it's a quicker pace. It's a lighter almost kind of, you know, idea of dystopian, where Orwell's so dense and it's so like you really have to pay attention to the minute nuances that he puts in there. I find his much darker than I found Brave New World. You know, Brave New World I found to be interesting. And certainly the end was very sad. Like I wasn't wanting that end. I wanted something different to happen. Where with 1984, I feel like when I'm reading it, I feel much more of a heaviness from that.
Yeah, I recommend 1984 to someone, I think at least once a week. And the more I see, you know, with like technology and surveillance and everything, and people are saying, oh, this is great. And I'm like, have you read 1984 though?
Right. Yeah, no, it's actually, you know, you're reading, you're like, oh, this is what's happening. You know, why are we not paying attention? Yeah, no, it's a great book. And it's one that I feel like everybody should read. But it's not a happy tale. For sure.
No, it's not. I always say, I think, you know, younger age in school, everyone should read Animal Farm. And then maybe a few years later, you know, when you're able to deal with the themes a little bit more, than read 1984. I hope we haven't given away the answer to the next question, but I always close every interview with the same question. And I don't give people prep time because that makes it too easy. So the question is essentially, if there was one existing book that you wish you had written out of anything that's ever been written, what would it have been?
Oh, you know, honestly, I go back to Octavia Butler. I really love Parable of the Sower, which also it kind of falls into that, you know, dystopian world. And when you're reading it, it so correlates to our current world. I have such admiration for her and what she put in her book. So I would say that's the one, I think.
Nice. I haven't actually read that yet. Is it one I'm going to have to go and pick up?
I would say so. If you really like those kind of dystopian type stories, I mean, and she does it in a really like fluid way, it flows easily, but like you're reading it and you're thinking, how did she write this so long ago when it's so pertinent to today?
Yeah, I think that's the sign of a classic, right? It's a sign of a great book that you could read it, you know. I read like ancient Greek literature sometimes, and even the plays and things, and sure, like the details of the society is different, but when there's certain themes that still exist today, that's how you know someone's written something good.
For sure. It's like they're seeing into the future. It's amazing.
Yeah,
I love it.
It's great. Awesome. Well, do you want to plug your site or social media or anything like that?
You know, honestly, if anybody goes to my website, which is authorjulietrose.com, I have all my links to my social media, to my books and upcoming events there. So that would be the
cool
first place to start.
I'll put a link anyway in the show notes. And they can hopefully pick up a copy of Do Over. Thank you very much for calling in. Have yourself a nice day.
Thank you so much. Bye.
Do over there. That was conveniently timed. We must
great.
Be masters of timing, PJ.
It's amazing how the universe just delivers exactly what we need.
Like 10 times in a row. Did you know something? We're being sued, actually, because we call the show Books Boys, but last month we just did episode 13, and apparently we've contravened the Trades Descriptions Act. It should now be Books Adolescents. Now that we've hit 13, we're
indeed.
Books Teens.
Entering puberty. Entering literary puberty.
We have to upgrade to Books Teens.
Books Teens.
That's a lot of remarketing, and I don't know.
Like, I don't know. Sure, like
we might just keep on breaking the law. You know?
Maybe you should be Peter Pan. I'll be Pippi Longstocking. You know what I mean? Keep that kind of inner child intact. You know what I mean?
Yeah, because then what? In another half a year, we're book adults, books men. It's a lot of rebranding. You know, it's
book
too much,
old man,
too much
work, book man. Book dead man. Yeah.
Yeah, book abuelos. I don't know. It's too much.
Book abuelos.
Well, PJ, we're going to wrap up, I guess, with our recommendations for this month. I'm going to recommend one that you recommended to me many years ago that changed my life.
Really?
I'm going to recommend one that I also recently lent to our mutual friend in exchange for the Murakami book.
It sounds like a character of Dickens, our mutual friend, but we're going to keep him.
Yeah, I'm doing
moments.
That deliberately.
Yeah, I know. Yeah. I know.
I lent him an Agatha Christie book, and then there were none.
Yeah.
Many years ago, you lent that to me, and I've now filled my shelf with about 70 Agatha Christie novels. I'm not going to go into any great depth on it, but if you've ever watched a murder mystery show,
I've seen episodes of Family Guy that ripped this off. Like, it's everywhere. It's in movies. Anytime you watch a show where a bunch of people go to a house or an island, mm-hmm. one by one, they die, it's ripping off this book, basically. This mm-hmm. is the... It's, I think it's in the top 10 best-selling books of all time. It is mm-hmm. the quintessential whodunit, locked room, murder mystery type scenario. And they die one by one, and you got to figure out, you know, whodunit. And I've read it twice, and both times, mm-hmm. it's surprised me. I lent it to our friend because it's a really good way to start. You know, if you're not sure about would I like, you know, Agatha Christie or not, then mm-hmm. you know, this is the one to start on, and mm-hmm. I can guarantee you'll like it. You know, so.
Awesome. Okay. Yeah. No. I mean, I read it myself. It is one of the best Agatha Christie books. Very unusual. So give it a go. And if you're fascinated in the slasher genre, well, what can I say? This started it, basically. So give it a try. What I recommend is going on Japanese. I have to recommend one of the many, many, many Japanese books I love. And I have to recommend a classic Japanese book. In fact, it's considered the Dickens of Japan. And there's none other Ooh. Than Natsume Soseki. Also, you can say Natsume Soseki. And basically, this guy is someone who studied in England, a very bookish chap at the turn of the 19th to 20th century. And he wrote this book called Bochan, also known as Our Darling. And it just started this kind of modern novel trend in Japan. And it's very Dickensian. And it's very Balzac-esque and even Galdosian. It's very, you know, it's very kind of much that light realism from the 1830s, but it's obviously a bit late in Japan in the 1900s and 19-teens. So I have to recommend two books, please. Bochan, for the classic kind of lighthearted guy. He's a teacher from Tokyo, and he's going off to Matsuyama and bathing, a kind of resort. And it's ridiculous. It's so funny. It's really actually, that's actually really hilarious. Actually, I rarely laughed out so loud. And it, even in translation, it's still great. And it's just lovely. And I've got to recommend one that actually Haruki Murakami recommends in the book,
okay.
Kafka on the Shore, where the character reads Natsume Soseki, if you remember, in the library. Mm. And he recommends one called The Miner, which is very unpopular. And most people in Japan actually dislike this book because it's very different to his other stuff. Essentially, this is the most existential, like one of the most existential novels you can ever get, particularly the first half, just about a boy who left, I think, Tokyo as well, because he got someone pregnant. And kind of him in the forest, walking around and just not knowing where he's going, what he did, and his sense of loss, but also freedom. And he kind of becomes a miner. It's gritty and it's introspective, not funny, completely different watch. And that's what I love about Soseki. He's kind of manic. He's like, you don't know who exactly he is. And he had a strange sort of personality. Give it a try
okay.
for fun. Give it a try for darkness. He's everything, Soseki.
Sounds good. And I should mention, because we did mention Dickens, I went to the Grand Opera House to see a musical of A Christmas Carol, and I was very, very happy. So I just thought, I did cry at the end when Scrooge gives him the turkey. I cried because it was very heartwarming and very touching.
That's nice.
And next month for Christmas, you know, PJ, I'm going to give a spoiler here. I thought, what will the kids really love next me to read next month for Christmas? So there's definitely going to be some Aristotle's Nicomachean Ethics. And I'm not going to spoil anything else, but there's going to be some more Spanish stuff. But definitely, I thought that Aristotle's a good one for the kids.
It's very Christmassy, you know? You want to get that ethics, you know, banged into them.
Well, guys, don't forget booksboys.com. Definitely tell your friends, because that's really good to get more people to listen. And patreon.com/booksboys. That's where you get this show early without some ads and also with all the extra stuff.
It's a lot of extras. It's piling up. I mean, I don't know where to put all this stuff.
There's so much. My shelves, my theoretical virtual shelves are full of extra stuff.
We have to do a clearing, guys. So do it.
And of course, we've got, you know, links on there to Instagram and everything else. And of course, hello to everyone listening on Radio Oxen. And we're happy to be on there. PJ, have you got anything else to add, or is that us?
I just want to say hello to our mutual friends. If he's listening, and just
hello,
like,
sir.
Hello, sir. Thank you very much for being part of our lives. I'm delighted that you.
And we're going to have him do some stuff with us very soon.
Wow. Oh, you've already said the gender. Okay. Well.
Oh, indeed. No.
Well, the mutual friend will be more involved, shall we say. And it's an unusual, more Camian kind of character. More Camian, mm-hmm. Dickensian, and all everything put together.
That's it. And guys, go listen. I've had a lot of fun doing the Dark Place Dreamers. So go and listen to that, because it's been crazy. and if you want to contact us, or you want to send in an audio clip or anything like that, like happens, you know, usually on the show, that's booksboys@hotmail.com. You know, give us a recommendation, say hello. Whatever.
Feel free to give us any books, your books or books that you like as well, for us to recommend, for us to review and to read. We'll be delighted.
That's it. And PJ, I thought we'd close this month with, do you remember the song One Night's Lovin' that we did about 6 years ago?
Yes, but I can't remember the melody now. I have to play it.
This song features some good guitar playing by yourself, a really nice solo, and some less good vocals by myself. but, you know, look, we'll see. I wanted to play my new song, but I didn't want to risk it, because sometimes when I make a new song, I think it's great, and then I'll listen, you know, a month later, and I think, oh my God, this is garbage. So I didn't want, it's too soon. Play One Night's Lovin'? So if the DJ would spin that record, and then after that, you'll have our closing credits, and we'll be back in about a month.
Christmas!
Books Boys was presented by The Dean and PJ Burke in association with Thaddeus Penguin Productions. This episode was brought to you by our sponsor,
The Big Fight and Raft Rescue.
If you would like to get in touch, you can email us at booksboys@hotmail.com or visit us at booksboys.com. The intro uses Driving in the 70s from the Of Soundtracks and Garage Bands EP by Trapdoor. And the outro uses Dog's Light by Bravo Max from the album of the same name. All music used is either Podsafe or used with permission.
If you'd like to support the show, go to patreon.com/booksboys, get the show early and all of our bonus Boof Fan the Boys shows. And you can also check out our music on Spotify or Apple Music.
Thank you kindly for listening to us. Please tell your friends. And come back next time for another episode of Books Boys. Read some books!
It was quite a good show, PJ. I didn't do Middlemarch in the end, but maybe next time, let's see. I'm already working on Isabel Allende and, goodness me, Aristotle for Christmas. I mean, come on, what's better than that?
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.